maternal depression is more than what's often called the baby blues. Baby blues is a temporary state that usually occurs within a few days of a baby's birth and can last up to 2 weeks. Maternal depression is more severe, lasts longer, and can even be life-threatening.
Hi, this is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, and you're listening to Into the Fold, Issues in Mental Health. The Hogg Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Children's mental health has always been a cornerstone concern of the Hogg Foundation. Before she died, Miss Ima Hogg established an endowment at the foundation to provide mental health services for children, youth, and their families in Houston and Harris County. The fund was not activated until after her death. Since 1976, the Ima Hogg Endowment has funded 167 grants totaling more than $28 million. More recently, Hogg Foundation grantees such as Texans Care for Children and Texas Appleseed have amassed an admirable record of advocacy on behalf of children in Texas. For our look at this issue, we thought it would make sense to focus on another important facet of the mental health of kids, the mental health of their moms. In order for Texas children to be healthy and thrive and to grow into successful adults, we must ensure their parents are healthy and children have positive early experiences. To reach that goal, the mental health of mothers during and after pregnancy cannot be taken for granted. Joining us today are Caitlin Dorge of Texas Pediatric Society and Adriana Kohler of Texans Care for Children for a conversation about the support that moms need during this critical phase and what it means for kids. We should also note that Caitlin is a former Hogg Foundation Policy Fellow. Caitlin and Adriana, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us today.
So there are a variety of terms for the phenomenon that we're talking about. Postpartum depression, perinatal depression, perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, etc. For our listeners, how do we describe these conditions affecting new mothers?
You're right. Although the term postpartum depression or maternal depression is often used, there are actually several symptoms and conditions that new mothers may experience. Maternal depression is more than what's often called the baby blues. Baby blues is a temporary state that usually occurs within a few days of a baby's birth and can last up to 2 weeks. Maternal depression is more severe, lasts longer, and can even be life-threatening. Maternal depression is a range of mood and anxiety disorders and depressive conditions that may begin during a pregnancy, in the weeks and months after, or up to a year after childbirth. Symptoms can include anxiety, panic attacks, feeling of guilt, shame, or hopelessness, and major depressive episodes. What does this look like? A new mother may face crippling anxiety as she's trying to bond with her newborn. A mom may face extreme depression as she tries to settle into a feeding routine and help her baby grow and play. She may struggle to engage or feel disconnected from her child. The symptoms, of course, can vary in severity, and that can affect the types of treatment needed.
Okay, and so for our listeners, that was Adriana Kohler of Texans Care for Children. Thank you for that. How prevalent is the problem of, if we're calling it maternal depression, which I think makes a lot of sense, and not just how prevalent, but how do we estimate its prevalence?
Right. Maternal depression is one of the most common complications of pregnancy. About 1 in 7 women face this condition during pregnancy or the months after. While all women are at risk, maternal depression disproportionately affects certain groups. For instance, women of low income, women with low incomes, teenage parents, and women with personal or family histories of depression may face higher rates. In fact, around half of parenting teens and moms with low incomes experience depressive symptoms.
So it is probably impossible to summarize the evidence that mothers impact the emotional well-being of their children. Are there any statistics that show most dramatically the downstream effects, like in terms of child development, educational attainment, et cetera, of poor maternal mental health on kids.
Yeah, absolutely. So we know, you know, from the research that the impact on children can be very serious. Maternal depression can impact maternal child attachment, child safety, and even child development. So we know that maternal depression can interfere with early bonding and maternal child interaction, which can actually lead to delayed language and cognitive development in infants and young children. Mothers with maternal depression also might be less likely to implement injury prevention measures, such as putting a baby on his or her back to sleep. Children are more likely to experience behavioral and social-emotional problems, including social withdrawal, poor emotional regulation, and reduced empathy towards others later down the line. And then we also know that these children have a higher chance of experiencing depression themselves or other mood disorders later in their childhood and adolescence.
Okay. So, Caitlin and Andrea, could you each talk about the policy work that you've done? And what positive developments have there been? And what gaps are there still?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we'll address this question in two parts, talking about the policy work we've done, which we've actually been able to do together, which has been really exciting, and what positive developments there's been. So last legislative session, the 85th legislative session, Adriana and I worked with other advocates on House Bill 2466 by Representative Sarah Davis, which made maternal depression screening billable to the infant's Medicaid or CHIP insurance for up to 1 year postpartum. So this is really good because, you know, it helps to cover the gap whenever mom doesn't have insurance coverage herself. And, you know, having worked with pregnant and parenting teens myself as a case manager, I know that moms, especially when there are a lot of barriers like transportation or lack of childcare, they're much more likely to make sure their baby is getting health care and getting their needs met than to look out for their own health or their own needs. So for instance, for infants, you have this built-in regular opportunity to touch base with the mom because infants are seen so often by their pediatric health care providers. So they are seen at 3 to 5 days, 1 month, 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, 9 months. I mean, there are all of these built-in opportunities to interact with the mother and make sure that you can conduct that screening. It's also a way to frame the issue as, you know, taking care of baby, where mom may be reluctant to put her needs first. You know, mother taking care of her mental health is actually taking care of her baby as well. So over the last 2 years after this bill passed, we've been working with the state to implement this legislation. At Texas Pediatric Society, we've been touching base with our members to see how things are going because they're the ones actually conducting for conducting the screening and billing for it. And it's a really, really incredible improvement, but the work is far from over. So, for instance, you can only bill for one maternal depression screening. So you can only screen mom, you know, For instance, you can only bill for one maternal depression screening for each infant up to 1 year postpartum. So this is really common in establishing a new benefit, especially since this bill passed without a fiscal note, so it didn't require any appropriation. But we may want to advocate for additional screenings in the future so that, you know, a pediatrician could screen a mom at 2 months, for instance, but then also be able to screen at 6 months or 9 months to see how the mother is doing. Additionally, there's this glaring question of, well, we've screened mom and she has maternal depression, so what do we do now since there's such a lack of support, so lack of insurance coverage, referral options, there's still mental health stigma that exists that I know the Hogg Foundation works really hard to address. And, you know, these things haven't gone away, so Adriana is going to go into some of these remaining gaps in more detail.
You're right, Caitlin. You've hit the nail on the head. Texas has made great strides by covering maternal depression screenings that are done at infant well-child visits. This is a great step. Early identification is the first piece of the puzzle. There are effective and well-researched treatment options to help a mom recover. Options can range from medication to counseling, therapy, and peer supports. But while maternal depression is a treatable condition, it often goes undetected or untreated. One reason is Texas's high uninsured rate. In fact, 1 in 4 women of reproductive age in Texas does not have health coverage. In rural areas, the challenge is even worse. About 1 in 3 Texas adults do not have health insurance. Texas has the highest rate and number of uninsured kids and adults in the country. Under current policies, Texas cuts Medicaid for pregnant women off. Under current policies, Texas cuts off Medicaid for pregnant women just 60 days after the birth of a child. This means new mothers may become uninsured at a time when symptoms of maternal depression are just surfacing. Imagine this. A mother with 2 kids, she may make $20,000 per year. She works 2 jobs, and she may not get job-based insurance through her employer. Her income's too low to qualify for subsidies in the health insurance marketplace. If this new mom struggles with maternal depression in the months after her baby's born, not having health insurance could mean she can't get mental health to recover. This can be devastating for her and her kids. We know that uninsured and low-income women are far less likely to receive treatment for depression. So there's more that we can do. There's some limited options in Texas. For example, there are limited benefits in the Healthy Texas Women Program. This is a state program that covers some maternal depression medications. But if a mom needs additional mental health care like counseling or peer supports, this isn't included. Also, some moms without insurance may find help at a local mental health provider, but wait lists could be long, and that may pose barriers. These are factors that are contributing to why many moms may not get the help she needs. The good news is that there's steps that Texas leaders can take to address this issue. First, state leaders at the Texas Capitol right now are advancing legislation to extend Medicaid coverage for already eligible moms. This would extend Medicaid coverage for 1 year. Having comprehensive, affordable coverage is a vital step to ensuring new moms get health care they need. Second, prenatal care is more than just ultrasounds at the OBGYN. Pregnancy care means mental health care to manage conditions and prevent any complications for mom and baby. In a state as big and as vast as Texas, transportation is a significant barrier. I'm sure you've heard that many times. This could lead to missed appointments. This session, lawmakers are advancing a bill to streamline medical transportation options so pregnant women and new moms can get to medical appointments.
So in addition to all of the things that Adriana mentioned, I wanted to mention something that's happened at the federal level and is now being sort of kicked to the states to implement, and that is the Family First Prevention Services Act. So last February 2018, Congress passed the Family First Prevention Services Act as a part of the Bipartisan Budget Act. And what this legislation does is it aims to shift child welfare focus and investment across the nation towards family-based prevention services and, to the extent possible, the placement of children in family-like settings and least restrictive settings when they are in foster care. And so Texas Pediatric Society advocated with our national affiliate, the American Academy of Pediatrics, when this bill was moving through Congress, and ultimately it passed. And now, you know, as I said, it's being kicked to the states to implement. So specifically what the bill does is require states to meet certain standards and capacity requirements for foster care placements in order to continue receiving the Title IV-E funding that we currently receive for children in foster care. But it also opens up new Title IV-E match funding for trauma-informed and evidence-based mental health, substance use, and in-home parenting support services for children at risk of entry into foster care, but also their caregivers. And the great thing about this is that there's no income eligibility to receive these services. So now that the bill is passed Congress, it's up to states to implement. Texas has taken a delay in the implementation in order to prepare, so we'll be implementing the bill in 2021. And we're just basically putting pressure on our legislators right now to make the investments and preparations needed to implement this legislation. So you may be wondering why this is relevant to maternal depression. And I will sort of paint a picture that one of our pediatricians testified about whenever she was testifying in support of implementation of Family First. So a family had come into her clinic and the mother had experienced very, very severe maternal depression that went unaddressed. And unfortunately, and very sadly, this resulted in the fatality of her infant and the and the placement of her remaining children in the foster care system. So that's not to say that this is the risk or potential outcome for every mother experiencing maternal depression by any means. As Adriana mentioned, maternal depression is so common and it doesn't look the same for every mom. Not only does maternal depression look different for every mom, the potential outcomes and interventions look different for every mother and every family. I bring up this more extreme case because the pediatrician advocating for implementation of Family First was explaining that she couldn't help but wonder how the outcome of this case would have been different for this family had the mom had access to the preventative mental health and in-home parenting supports that Family First will bolster in our state. So what we're trying to do this session is get the state to take inventory of what current programs that would qualify for the federal match. So the type of program, who does it serve, what's the geographic location, where are the gaps, what's the eligibility, you know, all of those things, and see which ones, you know, we can use to qualify for the federal match, and then where areas of support are needed in our state, where the gaps are. So there's a whole lot more to implementing Family First than that, but I will stop there so we can keep going.
Okay, wonderful. So we have just talked about the larger policy environment, but are there any initiatives that have emerged on the ground that health providers or community-based organizations can readily implement, and what is the evidence for their effectiveness?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's really, we've seen a groundswell of work being done on adverse childhood experiences and related factors. So for those not familiar with adverse childhood experiences, these include a number of experiences that fall under the categories of abuse, household challenges, and neglect that happen in early childhood. And I say ACEs or related factors because the research and work has expanded to go beyond the original ACEs in the original ACEs study. So among these adverse childhood experiences include the presence of mental health and substance use issues in the household, such as maternal depression. And addressing ACEs is the most preventative of preventative efforts.
So, and ACEs is just an acronym for?
For adverse childhood experiences.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking for our organization, Texas Pediatric Society in particular, we are in the second year of a local project to help pediatricians identify and address adverse childhood experiences in the primary care setting. So the pediatric primary care setting is a fantastic place to address adverse childhood experiences and related factors because children go to the doctor every year for their well-child visit, and their parents typically go with them. But we know that the answers don't just lie within the pediatric community. So many other organizations are coming into the fold to focus on early childhood health in many other service areas. So, for instance, there are opportunities to address parental ACEs during and even before pregnancy that mitigate the impact on children before they're even born, which is really neat.
Exactly. There's growing recognition across the country and in Texas that experiences, both positive and negative, during the first few years of a child's life provides the foundation for a child's life for decades. There are several ways to address maternal depression and promote positive early experiences, both inside and outside the clinical setting. Caitlin mentioned some of the great initiatives happening in the clinical setting. There are many community-based initiatives as well. As an example, Texas home visiting programs like Nurse Family Partnership and others are evidence-based programs across the state that help parents and children reach their potential. By matching trained experts with parents, Texas home visiting programs have a demonstrated track record of improving maternal health, child development, and reducing stress levels in maternal depression. There are also some newer programs like Family Connects, a voluntary evidence-based home visiting program in a few Texas counties. This aims to serve all families with newborns. Family Connects offers that personal connection with a trained expert who can answer medical questions, recommend ideas for social support, readily offer community resources to improve both a mother and an infant's well-being. These local, community, or home-based programs can go a long way in promoting maternal health, and the state and our community should continue supporting them.
Okay, thank you. So do either of you have any personal stories that bring home for our listeners why this issue is so important? I mean, Caitlin, you mentioned that the work you work that you've done with pregnant teens. One thought that I had while you were talking was that, you know, that mothers, they get used to having to rely on their own resourcefulness to get them through rough patches and then some. But that very resourcefulness can be a double-edged sword because they may not avail themselves of the supports that are available. So perhaps that's, or either of you could speak to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, you know, just speaking from my experience as a previous experience as a case manager, you know, I think that was something that we had to talk a lot about with new moms is, you know, you don't have to do this alone. You are incredibly strong and incredibly resilient. But there are supports here for you. And if you're struggling, it is completely okay to reach out for help and to take advantage of the supports that that we try to connect you with. Because, you know, ultimately you're doing this for yourself and the betterment of your future, but also for your family and the betterment of your child's future.
Exactly. Over the past few years, I've spoken with moms, dads, grandparents, health providers, mental health therapists. In particular, one Texas mom told me about crippling anxiety and depression that she faced and struggled with when her two twins were born. She wanted the best possible circumstances for her kids. Her twin girls were beautiful, and when they were still pretty small, she started developing anxiety, severe anxiety and depression. She wasn't able to cherish those precious moments with her child. Maternal depression is scary and isolating, as Caitlin mentioned. In this instance, with this mom, her husband and her family didn't know what to do, didn't know the signs, and assumed she just needed more sleep. The good news is that with the help of her doctors and the baby's pediatricians, she recovered swiftly. Her maternal depression was spotted early enough so that she could be a wonderful mom, form a deep bond with her two twin girls, and enjoy the big moments of babyhood. We hope this can be a reality for more Texas moms and families.
So, for anyone who would like to learn more about this issue, what additional resources do you recommend?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, you know, speaking to the pediatricians that may be in the audience or, you know, the other people conducting mental health screening now newly in the pediatric primary care setting, there is a Texas Health Steps online provider education course that talks about integrating screening for maternal depression into your pediatric practice. And then there is also a Texas Clinicians Postpartum Depression Toolkit out of the Health and Human Services Commission that is updated pretty regularly and has a lot of resources for, you know, when an issue does arise or when a mother does screen positive for maternal depression. There are also a lot of home visiting programs, as Adriana mentioned, such as the Nurse Family Partnership Program, which provides nurse home visiting. And then the program that I was actually a case management for was out of LifeWorks based here in Austin. It was the Teen Parent Services Program. And that was actually a community collaboration or part of a community collaboration with People's Community Clinic called the Tandem Program. So all of these different organizations such as LifeWorks, Any Baby Can, People's Community Clinic, and some others, Austin Child Guidance Center, they participated in this sort of wraparound program to support pregnant and parenting young moms in Austin and give them the supports that they need, especially when they don't qualify for other home visiting programs.
Yeah. There's some resources for moms and families who are seeing a mom struggle. For example, Postpartum Support International. For example, Postpartum Support International is a national organization that operates a helpline for moms and their families. PSI has regional coordinators based in different areas of Texas. These trained volunteers offer informed support to moms and their families, and they can refer families to resources in the local area. particularly resources that serve pregnant and parenting families. There's also the Pregnancy and Postpartum Health Alliance of Texas. This has a great directory of local area providers that are trained and specialize in maternal depression. PPHA also offers trainings for all types of health professionals, from social workers to doctors to therapists, so they can gain skills and expertise to serve moms with maternal depression. The website for NAMI Texas has some great resources to find local mental health providers in your area. And then finally, Help for Parents, Hope for Kids is a website operated by the state. Families can search by county and find youth and parent-focused supports in their area. This could be home visiting, mental health, parent groups, and mentoring programs. These are some great resources to check out.
Thank you so much. That about does it for this episode. Just remember that May is Children's Health Month, and so I encourage all listeners to learn as much as they can about maternal mental health and the relationship between that and children's health. In the episode description, I have included a link to a recent report by Texans Care for Children for those who want to get up to speed on this issue and why it is so important. Caitlin, Andrea, thanks so much for taking the time. We really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.